Welcome to The Open Source Way. This is our podcast series, SAP's podcast series about the difference that open source can be. And in each episode, we'll talk with experts about open source and why they do it the open source way. I'm your host, Carsten Hohage, and in this episode, I'm going to talk to Mike Milinkovic, Mirko Böhm, and Sebastian Wolf about the Cyber Resilience Act, or in short, the CRA. Hi, Mirko, Mike, and Sebastian. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here again with you. Yeah.
Well, you sit office next door anyway, so yeah, you don't have to thank me for being able to be here. Anyhow, who are these people? Mike Milinkovic is Executive Director of the Eclipse Foundation. Mirko Böhm is Senior Director, Community Development of the Linux Foundation Europe. And Sebastian Wolf is my colleague at SAP and member of SAP's Open Source Program Office, where he's also in contact with SAP's representatives at the European Union. And that was one of the important keywords that we will come to later. But in the first place, as we're in a virtual recording here, have you all actually met in real life?
I believe we have. Not all at the same place, but...
That's correct.
Sebastian, I've met Mirko many times.
So I think not all of us at the same place, but...
Yeah, I've certainly met Mike. Yeah, I'm not sure if I met Sebastian in person.
Could be in 100% sure, but we will do that. I'm pretty sure.
One does lose track, right? After the virtual years, I sometimes also have that. Have I met you ever in person? If someone is unexpectedly tall or small, then you know you don't or you haven't. But otherwise, sometimes it gets fuzzy. Yeah, I can understand that. Anyway, one disclaimer first. All of us, we're not full legal professionals. So anything stated in this podcast are personal views of tech-oriented or more or less tech-oriented people. Neither of us has the official position to totally represent any legal entity. That said, it will be interesting. Let's look at what we're talking about anyway, the CRA, the Cyber Resilience Act. Mirko, would you like to summarize what that even is?
Yeah, sure. So the Cyber Resilience Act, CRA, establishes essential cybersecurity requirements that all businesses and open source communities that operate in Europe will have to implement. It's the first EU-wide cybersecurity regulation, and it explicitly defines separate roles for manufacturers and for open source software stewards, meaning foundations like us. And if you think about that, it really changes the playing field for collaborative development of software, and it reshapes the relationship between the stewards or foundations and the companies that are participating in development and later using the software. The CRA has three policy goals. Of course, to reduce vulnerabilities in digital products, meaning hardware and software, that's important here. To ensure cybersecurity is maintained throughout a product's lifecycle, and to enable users, consumers, to make informed decisions when they select and operate devices. It's a horizontal regulation, meaning it affects everybody who basically does business in Europe. It doesn't matter if the company sits in Europe or if the open source community sits in Europe. If your products are available in Europe, then it's relevant to you. And maybe one last point here is important, that the EU really intends to play an internationally leading role with this regulation, meaning the regulation is not just meant to affect how people operate in Europe, but really we want to kind of export good cybersecurity practices. I think this indicates why the CRA is so important for essentially everybody who makes or contributes to digital products.
All right.
Yeah, I agree with everything Mirko said, but just want to reemphasize one point, which is it's not whether you are a European company or open source community. If you are making software or a cyber physical device available in the European single market, then this applies to you.
All right. So it's in that way similar to any trades and goods regulation for foods or whatever that are imported into the EU, or data protection acts and whatsoever, right?
Exactly. I think it kind of makes digital products more similar to physical products, as you said, like food and other physical products. There's a change for the software ecosystem. Because until now, software has been either excluded from regulation or regulated differently from physical goods. And I think just this term digital products in the CRA already indicates that it's kind of all-encompassing. Everything that has some sort of processor in it and software on it is a digital product.
And was that triggered by current geopolitical things happening, or has that been brought on its way way earlier?
I think it started earlier. So the original impetus, as I understand it, is we can all remember, there's, I can't remember exactly which attack it was, but the sort of a very widely known DDoS attack that took advantage of webcams. And that was one of the impetus. It was, and the original scope of the CRA when they first started was really around cyber-physical devices, but in particular consumer IoT devices. And I think to a large degree, you can really think of this as the initial impetus is we need to protect European consumers from shoddy cyber-physical goods, particularly with the, Mirko mentioned, the life cycle aspect of this. And that's very important. It's not just about shipping a device which is secure at the moment you ship it, it's keeping that device secure for the life of the device. So that was the original impetus. And honestly, if it had stayed that way, the CRA would not have been that big of a deal. But then while, is again, this is sort of like secondhand, but as I understand it, while, and Mirko maybe no correct some of any of my mistakes, but while they were drafting it, Log4Shell happened. There was a recognition that, oh my gosh, you know, this cybersecurity issue goes beyond just cyber-physical devices. We need to actually think about including pure software within the scope of this regulation. And it was the extension of the original remit of the CRA to include pure software, which I think really caught the attention of a lot of people, because that's a game changer. Like, the regulation of electronic devices has been around since as long as we've had electronic devices. I mean, that's nothing new. But the regulation of pure software is something which is very new. And we, I think that's one of the things to really keep in mind is what the CRA is doing is for the first time in history, regulating the software industry.
Okay.
In its entirety. Global. And so the impacts of that are very, very far reaching. I mean, we're here to talk about open source. You know, we're part of the larger software and technology industry. That's why we're here and how it impacts the open source communities that help support the greater software industry.
Yep. I was just going to turn it to that and remind everyone that this is not a devices or an overall software podcast, but an open source podcast. So the CRA, is that especially relevant for open source software, or is it just also relevant for open source software, Mike?
I would say at this point, as it has come to pass, the final version of the CRA, I would say it's more the latter. It's like open source is included. The original draft of the CRA, I would describe it as an existential threat to not only open source, but honestly to Europe's wealth and prosperity. And innovation economy, because the original draft of the CRA would have put burdens on open source developers and open source projects and communities that were frankly impossible for them to meet. And to, you know, the only logical response would have been to say, my open source project is not available in Europe. I refuse to let you use it in Europe, which would have been, I'll let your imaginations go from there. That would have been bad. Fortunately, thanks to, colleagues like Mirko and a whole lot of other people, Martin Arvidsson from NLNet Labs and Dirk Wilhelm van Gulik from Apache Software Fund, a whole bunch of people, spent an enormous amount of time and energy to state our case with the co-legislators and to, I think, achieve a great deal of success in improving the CRA. The really good news is the process here, I think, worked, that we were listened to. And I think the outcome is something, it's imperfect, but I think it's workable. And I think in the end, this ended up being a reasonable regulation with reasonable impacts on the software, the open source communities and projects. And it's going to be a busy 3 years as we get into the implementation phase, because there is an enormous amount to do, but there's a lot of optimism amongst the open source communities that are aware of this. Not everybody is fully aware of what's happening here. I think that there's some optimism that, yeah, we can make this work. And in the end, there might even be some benefits for open source developers that come from this.
I guess you're describing something that's on an abstract level, the same for all these kinds of regulations, also for agriculture or for the automotive industry or whatever. Well, the EU is known to have a tendency to sometimes be ambitious about their regulations, let's put it that way. But let me hear a different perspective now, because Mike and Mirko, you're speaking for two open source software foundations. Sebastian, you as my colleague, speak from a more corporate, the SAP perspective. What is your take on the relevance for open source or for open source at SAP of the CRA?
Yeah, so to make the similar point as Mike did, it's a fundamental change of how we develop and ship software or will develop and ship software. Just because open source is so fundamentally important for virtually all products and services we are developing. Almost all products and services somehow include or depend on open source software. So if any open source ecosystem, even smaller communities, would be impacted by this regulation, negatively impacted by this regulation, we as a corporate, as a company, need to take action and also need to take care that these communities are protected, that the ecosystem, the open source ecosystem, is protected. And that's also why we, of course, supported the foundations and all these initiatives in changing the Cyber Resilience Act for the better, so that it becomes manageable, that it becomes actionable. Of course, I still see some, interesting questions ahead of us in the next 3 years, but I completely agree. It's much better than it looked like last year or 2 years ago. In essence.
Okay.
Maybe that would be my addition as well. Mike described kind of what the first draft of the CRA looked like, and that forced the open source community to form a pretty broad coalition with all of the major foundations and many of the bigger software projects like Python and Rust and others to band together and to submit our opinions jointly to the European Union, which had a really surprising great impact. But that also resulted in a kind of a new version of the CRA. It was almost rewritten at the end of the process and to really take our concerns into account. And I can say that I was quite positively surprised here that our lawmakers were willing to take such a drastic step. They probably realized that the original draft was a bit off when it comes to the interaction between open source and industry, and came up with some maybe still concepts we have to get used to, but they're really, I think, going in the right direction. They will challenge us as the open source community in our relation to industry, because they make a couple of assumptions quite explicit, like that open source foundations or open source software stewards are working differently and play a different role than manufacturers, for example. And I think that's something that we will have to handle the next 3 years.
Although it sounded to me from what Sebastian said that the concerns are not all that different between the corporate players and the open source foundations. At least I couldn't make that out yet, what the difference is. Everything seems to be, I mean, we've established it's valid for everyone geographically or politically. So the Chinese and the Americans also have to care because Europe is still an important market. The Europeans have to care because it comes from their side and in the first place applies to them anyway. Corporations have to care, foundations have to care, because everything's so interwoven in the software large architectures of this world that you just hand the requirements down, basically, right?
We can get quite specific. The interests are very much aligned, Carsten. That's what you said. Like the industry and the open source community have very similar interests here, but the roles are different. So for example, a manufacturer that integrates an open source component into a product and brings it into the market is responsible for what they're integrating and the cybersecurity aspects of that. And that's what the law makes clear. An open source software steward making software available is not commercially bringing it into the market. And the first manufacturer that takes it has to apply due diligence to make sure that this is suitable for the product and is safe. And I think that's so same interests, but different responsibilities under the law.
Okay, so you're saying if it had remained in its initial state, the CRA, then it would have basically heavily stepped on the brake of what has happened since 20 years, that corporate players like SAP and Microsoft and everyone are pretty freely using open source components, right?
Mirko nailed it in his last couple of comments. Absolutely correct. Thinking forward, I think that there's some, opportunities. You know, one of the things that is, I think, a potential opportunity here is today, corporations can embed open source software in their products without ever really paying any attention whatsoever to the health of the upstream project that they are using. And the CRA is going to change that, in that they are now going to have some responsibilities that for the lifetime of the product, that they're going to have to be able to, you know, take that open source software and make sure that it is securely used within the context of their product. And when you multiply that across, you know, when you have an open source project that's potentially used by tens of companies and hundreds of products, or sometimes even, you know, hundreds of companies and thousands of products, it's going to make a lot more economic sense for these companies to collaborate on the security work in the upstream project, as opposed to every single company replicating all of this effort themselves in their use of that open source project. I think the opportunities that stems from this regulation is that there is a new economic nudge for corporations to subtly change their behavior and their relationship with upstream open source projects. Everybody who's been involved in open source for any length of time knows that we have a sustainability problem with many open source projects. And I'm not saying this is the solution, but I'm saying that there is a new, like I said, economic nudge that could have beneficial implications for the sustainability of open source projects down the road that didn't exist before this regulation. So that's going to be a really interesting thing to see how it plays out over the next, decade. This is not going to happen. This is not going to transform overnight. But I do think that it's going to subtly change behavior in ways that we don't quite know yet. But I think at least at first glance seem to have positive implications.
Okay.
Yeah, but would absolutely agree here. So I'm also really looking forward to these changes. And honestly, I hope that open source foundations can and will play a larger role in comparison to previous years. Of course, they have already played a big role in the open source ecosystem, in the open source communities, but I completely agree here. And when it comes to corporations taking the just open source components or projects and integrating them, I have to add a little bit to that, at least for SAP. I can only speak for SAP, but individually for us, we've already had quite some, let's say, similar internal regulations when it comes to consuming open source projects with respect to managing vulnerabilities, with respect to reporting and other things. So we tell our product owners and the responsible colleagues, if you take something from somewhere, it doesn't even necessarily need to be open source, but especially for open source, the time you are taking that and integrating into a product and shipping it, you assume responsibility over the whole product. And that, of course, also includes the open source component. So you need to be sure that you, take the right component that is in sustainable development, that you potentially also have some knowledge that you ideally also can contribute to if something happens, to ensure that we also meet our guidelines with respect to managing vulnerabilities. And of course, I'm 100% sure that other companies also do that. And just know that some external regulations come on top of that. So we also need to report things to the public or to the institutions, and that it becomes an overall, framework for all corporations. I'm pretty sure that, just to have a an effect, an economic effect. People join forces in foundations, in similar things, similar organizations, to address all these regulatory steps that need to be taken in a more economic way.
A lot of your statements are in the future. I don't know if we mentioned it. When is this plan to become active, the CRA?
Yeah, it's a 3-year phase-in period. So I think it's expected to, it's a little unclear whether it's going to be passed into law, whether it's going to be before the election or just after the election. So I think the longest expectation would be, say, around November 2027.
So 2027. And then you already touched on, Sebastian, mentioning product owners and so on. Or sorry, Mirko, was there still something else you wanted to add to what Sebastian said?
I wanted to add something to Sebastian, to his statement. It's great to hear that SAP has already policies in place that implement good practices, as they're now starting to become expected. I think this is one of the very interesting aspects about the CRA is that it formalizes good practices in many places, like having a policy that is public that tells consumers how they can report vulnerabilities in the products or can inform themselves about vulnerabilities that are known about the product. Every manufacturer should have that, but does everybody have that? Not sure. So the COA says, this is a good practice and we'll just make it a requirement. And if you are like an excellent player, like Sebastian just described for SAP, I don't think there will be much in terms of surprises that you will have to implement based on the COA. But I think it's actually great to say, this should be the baseline. Every manufacturer should do that. Every product should get security fixes shipped automatically over a support period and separate from functional updates. I think that's just a good requirement. So yes, there is a bit of overhead. It will have an impact on the governance of communities, on how manufacturers build products. But the intentions and also the way it's now implemented, I think will have overall a positive impact on cybersecurity.
That was pretty psychic because it was part of the answer to what I was going to ask next. What should everyone be doing until 2027? And I think you already partly answered that. That is put in place good practices. Right up to now, we've kind of abstractly been talking about this. Are you aware of like an example of one of the standards or regulations or whatever, something very prominent that's part of the CRA?
Well, that's actually one of the challenges is because in order to fully implement the CRA, we are going to need some new European harmonized standards for secure software development. And there's really sort of two aspects to security that the CRA touches upon that I think you kind of have to separate in your mind. And one is secure by design, so how to write secure software, and the other one is supply chain security. Everything from software bill of materials to making sure that you know everything that is all the component pieces that are going into your product that contain software, and then there's the lifecycle aspect. And so in the end, right, if you are a manufacturer placing a product that contains software on the European market once the CRA is in full effect, you're going to have to affix a CE mark to your product. And in order to put that CE mark on your product, you're going to have to conform to the requirements of the CRA. Now, typically the way that's done in other industrial sectors is that there is a harmonized standard that if you conform to that standard, then you are given a presumption of conformance with the regulation. Right now, these standards don't exist. When it comes to standards development, 3 years goes by in the blink of an eye. There's that is up. And in addition to creating these standards, then companies have to put in the practices to follow those standards. In addition, for important products with digital elements, which are described in the annexes of the CRA, there is going to be a requirement to use an external auditor from a notifying body in order to authorization to affix the CE mark. So over the next 3 years, We have to develop a bunch of standards. We have to implement a bunch of standards, and we have to train a whole pile of auditors in order to allow products to continue to ship in the European Union. And like I said before, those 3 years are going to go by in the blink of an eye. And on top of all that, I think, and I'm sure Mirko agrees with me, from our perspective, a lot of these standards bodies, historical standards bodies, don't have a long tradition in software, and they particularly don't have a long tradition of and history with open source development practices. And so making sure that that the way that we do things in open source are properly reflected in these standards is a concern and something that we're going to be keeping an eye on. So I think from a certain perspective, we can claim, I think justifiably, that we did a good job in having the regulation amended. But now there's you know, 1,000 implementation details, any which of could potentially cause you know, pretty significant issues down the road. So there's going to be a lot of time and investment spent by our respective organizations in making sure that open source software developers are properly reflected in these new processes.
Reminds me a tiny bit of the internal product standards we've had at SAP for decades that have grown from the mainframe world into the client server world, into the cloud world. And as you can maybe imagine, are not always fully applicable to a cloud service anymore either. By the way, we're talking any kind of service or a software component or entity, right? It's not about cloud only when we talk CRA, right?
I think it's primarily about products that consumers can get their hands on. So a digital camera, a baby monitor, your laptop computer. Software that's only in the cloud, that the user is only interact with through the browser, separate regulation, basically. The CRA only extends to the cloud where the device that the consumer has interacts with the cloud, and the cloud part is important or necessary for the device to operate, where then the cloud side can have, for example, cybersecurity impact on the device. So it's really a consumer-focused law.
Okay, and we're talking end consumer from a market perspective, not from a consumer-provider perspective as we understand it in software.
Consumer in the supply chain logic, I would say. So there's always a supplier and a consumer. One manufacturer that gives you, it sells you something, and somebody who takes it. So I would understand it as a business that buys a digital device has the same demands against the manufacturer as a consumer.
Okay, which then, of course, in a world where we build cloud applications that consume services this way and that, it gets a little beyond the understanding of the end consumer that we have in a food market, for instance, right?
Yeah, but I think this is where we say we're all not lawyers, so.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, so what I know, especially when we also take into account what SAP is, let's say, building and also shipping to our customers, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but how far I understand the upcoming regulation is that it definitely affects on-premise software, so all things that we are physically handing out to our customers to deploy on their systems. And for the cloud world, software as a service, I think there's something in the text that says, okay, if it affects remote data processing, then it's also included. And for other things on in the cloud world, there's this NIS2 directive that is this other regulation, what I think Mirko was talking about, that also gives some additional regulations, and that's already in effect, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, that's the slight difference. Yeah.
Okay, I think we have successfully at least established what the CRA is about. We have at least established that all product owners, software architects, and so on should get better informed than we have even informed them in this podcast. I don't think we have the time to dig much deeper into it. And as that is the case, are there any very good tips where to go to find more information? Is there like a CRA homepage or other Git repos or Stack Overflow discussions that deal with it, so on?
I can't think of a single resource that you can go to, unfortunately. I can point people to my blog, clipstatfoundation.blog. There's a number of posts there that and I'm not saying just because read my content, but there's a lot of links to other content that I think is quite good. I mean, for me personally, the first thing that I read on this that really got me going on and getting engaged was a blog from a gentleman by the name of Martin Artson from NLNet Labs. And I think, you know, he deserves a lot of credit for sort of waking everybody up to the issues. So there's a wealth of material out there, and quite a bit of it written from the perspective of open source developers or stewards. Unfortunately, I can't think of, there's one other place I can think of. The Open Source Initiative, Simon Phipps in particular, wrote a couple of blog posts that served as aggregators for a lot of other blog posts. So that's another resource that I can point to as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe one thing to add here is that most of the blog posts that you currently find are kind of written in the process of as we were getting to the last version, final version of the CRA. So they describe a bit the concerns that we had in between. And I don't think we have like a full, summary. And I think that's of the last version. I think that's probably because we're waiting for the parliamentary vote. We're saying let's wait a little bit because every article number, everything that you write in there now may change. So, but I expect this information to come up basically as soon as there's a final version of the law available. Maybe one thing we want to add, just to not confuse the listeners, the COA affects open source communities and it affects manufacturers. Individual developers who are occasionally contributing to a project are exempt from the COA. That's important to know. So if you're a hobbyist open source developer who occasionally submits a patch somewhere, the COA does not cover this work. And similarly, if you contribute to projects that are not under your own responsibility, so you contribute to an upstream project, that contribution is not covered by the COA. It's the next release that the upstream project makes. That's important to know because there are like stewards, manufacturers, and then there are people that are occasionally contributing. It's one thing I think that's important to point out here is that the nature of your work may change over time. So you may be a hobbyist developer, and then either your project gets bigger and you become, with your group of other contributors, a steward of the project, or you may start a business, a startup company, and then you become a manufacturer. So it's important to watch out for these transitions because that changes the role that you play under the new law. So I think that's important to take away. Kind of be aware what your role is as you act. Are you an individual? Are you a steward? Are you a manufacturer?
Okay. Thanks for that. And we, of course, any links mentioned, we'll try to have under the podcast in the notes as well. And also what I was thinking in the process of this, maybe we should revisit the topic in 12, 18 months from now.
Certainly a good idea, yeah. That brings also to my tip on resources potentially. I think there's a good set of recordings from the last FOSDEM in Brussels in February. There was a whole dev room on, open source in European legislative landscape. And I think Mirko even had a session there. Everything is recorded. And if you want to get at least the context and some additional thoughts and questions, I think that's also something I would point to, and we share the link, of course.
Yeah, it's a good resource from FOSDEM. You also see this coalition of open source organizations at play because they organized this together, which was really nice. And you also see European Commission and EU representatives on the panel answering questions about what they have written, which is, I think, for me, quite courageous from their perspective. And I'm really thankful that they're engaging with the open source community this openly. It was really nice.
Okay, then that definitely sounds like another link for the notes. And these links were the famous before last question. The famous last question is, what are your key takeaways? What would you want everyone to remember from this podcast? I don't know, 1 to 2 each. Let's take turns. Mike starts.
The Cyber Resilience Act is going to regulate the software industry for the first time. The changes are going to go beyond just open source. If you are a professional software developer, one way or another, over time, this is going to affect what you do as part of your job. And so I think it's a really good idea to familiarize yourself with the topic and be aware that this massive change is occurring.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Another one to add to that, Mirko?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway is for manufacturers that a 5-year support period or longer possibly is a serious support period, and that to support it, you need to work with the upstream projects that you're integrating to make sure that they're viable for as long as you plan to ship the product. And I think this will change the interaction between manufacturers and upstream communities or stewards. And 3 years of an implementation period, as Mike said, it's a very short period of time considering the amount of adaptations that we have to work through. So take it seriously, start thinking about it very fast.
Okay, Sebastian.
Yeah, not that much to add. I completely agree with both of you. Maybe one phrase at the end, don't panic. There will be solutions to virtually everything, as it was also be for GDPR, for instance, and other regulations. We will be there as well after CRA is in place. So we, the open source communities, and I'm really, really looking forward also to positive implications of this.
Okay, so don't panic and bring a towel. Thank you very much, Mike, Mirko, and Sebastian for being our guests today. It was nice to have you all here.
Thanks for the invitation.
Arthur, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
And thank you everyone out there for listening to The Open Source Way. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Don't miss the next one. We usually publish every last Wednesday of the month. And you will find us on OpenSAP, on all your open source podcast clients, but also, of course, in the regular Apple, Spotify's and so on. Right. Thanks again and bye-bye. See you next time. Or hear you next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.